Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast, your weekly dose of talking about watching soccer on TV, online and apps. Coming up on episode 66, we disclose which network beIN Sports has filed a complaint against, how Fox are trying to pull the wool over the eyes of the soccer industry, why Liverpool and Manchester City fans better start looking for some alternate plans for the Champions League, and news about a potential new women's soccer league. Plus, we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, and I'm joined today by Kartik Krishnaiyer. We're going to attempt to pull you out of this international break kind of frigid zone with some entertaining and hopefully some thought-provoking analysis about what we've been watching this past week, as well as some of the latest news from the soccer media industry. So, Kartik, let's start off by going through what you've been watching.
I only watched one sporting event this entire week, which was the that's incorrect. I mean, on Thursday, I watched the NCAA tournament, and Miami was eliminated by Loyola Chicago. Haven't watched anything since then from the NCAA tournament. Only football match I watched all weekend was the Huddersfield Palace game, which was a cracking match. It was an open game. Partly because Palace scored early. They had Wilf Zaha back, which is so important for them. Andros Townsend, who got back from injury himself very recently. In fact, half that team has gotten back from injury recently. Played very well. I thought Huddersfield played decently in their build-up play, their ability to string together passes. But Alex Pritchard is a player I rate highly and hasn't made quite the impact at Huddersfield I thought he would when he came over from Norwich. But he had some nice moves, although he got pulled off around minute 60. And it was an interesting match. So I watched that. And then I did watch Goal Zone, which featured the full 12-minute uncut rant from Jose Mourinho, which ended up consuming most of my thoughts for the rest of the weekend, to be honest with you. We complain about Jose, and I complain about him more than just about anyone, but you wonder what we would do without him.
Yeah, it would make things a little bit less interesting, but he does it to himself, though. This Kartik, I thought, was just a really strange rant, kind of almost trying to bring Manchester United down, the club, the fans, the industry, the Premier League, to say that Manchester United is not really shouldn't be ranked that highly, or the expectations should be lowered considerably. And he went through the history of kind of what they've done in previous seasons in the Champions League.
I also found it disingenuous because this is a man who for 15 years has used his command of the English language to weaponize words. And he, during this rant, on multiple occasions said, well, I don't know what the word is in English. I don't know how to describe it in English. Trying to hide from the fact that his command of the language, we know he was a translator for Sir Bobby, among others. His command of the English language has been part of his persona. So, again, you know, he's trying to take shots at the club of Manchester United, talking about heritage being the last 5 years, which it's not, or last whatever time period he was using, 5-7 years, which it's not. And then essentially saying that all of the players he inherited, which were many of them are still in his team. Many of them were bought for massive fees. A few of them are holdovers from Sir Alex, like Ashley Young, are not at the level of the Manchester City players. It was bizarre.
Well, it was bizarre too. I mean, I'm glad you picked up on the English part of it, because I know that, I mean, we've heard so many interviews from him in the past, but his English is usually a lot better than that. It was almost as if, like, he on purpose kind of played up the Portuguese side of things, and I don't know. It was really strange. It was really, as if he's been listening to Carlos Carvajal from Swansea with his kind of broken English. But Jose's English is much better than that, which is really strange, the way it came out. I don't know if it just was, I don't know, who knows what.
No, I felt like Jose and his his compatriot, Andre Villas-Boas, they didn't quite get the slack some other foreign managers did, get cut the slack that some other foreign managers did, because they had such great command of the English language. Right. Villas-Boas, similar thing. it was bizarre. You're absolutely right. He tried to dial back and act as if he feels like he'll get the kid glove treatment that Carvajal is getting. He feels Carvajal is probably getting. He feels that someone like Antonio Conte has gotten at times, and certainly Manuel Pellegrini, who struggled in English, and Roberto Mancini, those sorts of managers, since he's talking specifically about Manchester City. Pep doesn't struggle with his English, so he can't hide behind that one. But I think that might have been what he was trying to pull, because I've never heard him even question the use of terminology before in the English language. And again, he has had such a great command of the language, which has been part of the reason his persona has developed. He's weaponized words in the English language because he knows the language so well.
Yeah, I think he's gone at the end of the season, Kartik. I whether it's PSG, whether it's after this World Cup, seeing what jobs become available on a national level, and then using that as leverage to get whether it's the PSG job or maybe Real Madrid if Zidane doesn't win the Champions League. But I think his days are numbered. And I thought I'm not a Manchester United fan, but if I was a Manchester United fan listening to this interview, it seemed like a slap in the face.
Yeah, it absolutely did. The rest of my week viewing has been the ESPN FC show, where I have to say Dan Thomas has done an outstanding job of trying to generate conversation points. He's even, kind of said it on Twitter, hey, what do you want us to talk about? Because it's an international break, and quite frankly, there's nothing to talk about. And so the topics of Mourinho and of Wenger have resurfaced, and then essentially the crew of Nicol Moreno and Burley, the crew of analysts have been asked to, what's your biggest disappointment of the season in the five major European leagues? Who's been the best player? Those sorts of questions, because I think we're going to struggle through it today. Also in our show, it just seems so ill-timed, and it's not just us saying it now. It's becoming more of a mainstream thought, Chris, that this break is particularly poorly timed.
Well, this one should be interesting, Kartik, because there's so many glamour matches scheduled. So you've got, I think, Germany-Brazil, Spain against Germany, England-Italy, Russia-Brazil. I mean, all the teams are heading to Europe for these really high glamour, high profile friendlies. Now, what the matches are, you mean, whether it's kind of a lot of youth players coming through the system, and it's more of on paper, it should be a great friendly, but then ends up being kind of disappointing or very, very lax, or these coaches just trying out different systems, different formations, different players. We'll have to wait and see. But this podcast will be fine. Next week's podcast, we might not have a lot to talk about,
but this one
we will, I think. So some of the things I caught, I won't go through everything, but some of the things I caught of interest was on last week's Europa League match, the Arsenal-Milan match. This was something new that Alexi Lalas did on Twitter before the match, but he did some live video from the office, the studio in Los Angeles with him and Keith Costigan. And they had the video, they kind of pointing at them, and they kind of talked through what they do pre-match to prepare to do commentary off the tube or off the monitor. And that was interesting. They answered questions. No revelations for any of the listeners, but it was interesting to kind of get an inside perspective on what happens behind the scenes, and that's something that happens far too infrequently. On the weekend, Swansea Spurs in the FA Cup, I watched that one. Huddersfield Palace, like you mentioned, the Stoke Everton match, I watched the second half of that, and then I watched Fenerbahce against Galatasaray in the Istanbul derby that was live on beIN Sports on Saturday. Commentators were Phil Shane and Matteo Bonetti. It was a great match atmosphere. It was great that this match was live on US television. It's been so long since it has been on live television in the US. But it was a disappointing result, though. It was a 0-0 game, but still, hopefully, in the future, hopefully we'll have more of these big Turkish matches on television. I did catch the highlights of Liverpool against Watford. I didn't watch the match live. Again, I have my kids playing soccer. But Mo Salah, oh my. I mean, this was absolutely incredible. And all the comparisons that came out after this match about Salah and Messi. I mean, the disappointing thing for me for Salah was just in that game against Man United recently, where he was practically invisible. So still a lot to be for him to prove on these big matches. But I mean, Watford's not the greatest by any means. But
he scored. But in fairness, because people get very defensive of any mention of Messi or any mention of these sorts of comparisons, Salah has now scored, if you include, one of the goals in this match was probably lucky, but the other three were really solid, skillful goals. Two of them were brilliant. And you add the other goals he scored since the turn of the year, the new year, since January 1st, I think he's probably scored more kind of breathtaking goals than any other player in a major European league, including Messi. So he's not just scoring goals. He's showing incredible vision. He's showing great touch, great creativity and ability in one-on-one situations to make the defenders miss and make the keeper guess wrong. He's got it all right now.
Yeah, I love him. I mean, watching him. I mean, hopefully Egypt will do well in the World Cup this summer, and that's another reason to watch the World Cup is to watch a player like this, and hopefully he'll shine on the international stage. But a really exciting player, and it's really helping, I'm sure, the Premier League in terms of viewers wanting to watch someone like this, even if they're not a Liverpool fan. And for Liverpool, I mean, hoping for, on their side, I'm sure they're hoping that they're winning new fans based on this one player alone. So also watched, this is something I haven't done in a long time, watched some Portuguese soccer. So I watched Porto against Boa Vista on Saturday on Gol TV. Commentary by Lindsay Dean, who we know from back in the days of Gol TV with Phil Shane and Ray Hudson. But this one was interesting in that there was a good use of VAR. There was a penalty kick late in the game. And we've seen this happen quite often, actually, when somebody coming up to take the penalty, they put down their foot, kind of the planting foot, and that slips at the same time that they're hitting the ball with their right foot. So what happened is it was a double touch. So the ball went in the back of the net, referee blew his whistle for a goal, or signal for a goal, and then VAR called it back. VAR and the referee went to review the VAR, and saw that it was a double touch and disallowed the penalty, and play resumed. And it happened really quickly, probably within a minute or a minute and a half. It was seamless, really. And it was a fair call. And Porto goes on to win the game 2-0 and leapfrogged Benfica on Saturday back into first place in the Primeira Liga. So it was entertaining. I watched that. We're going to get Southampton to watch that on Sunday. I think it was Sunday. And Wigan, I thought, was much the better team in the first half. And probably the scoreline probably doesn't reflect how close this game was between those two teams. And then also watched Cologne against Leverkusen.
I should mention I did watch a good chunk of the Wigan-Southampton game. I just didn't watch any portion of the match where there were goals. The portion I watched from about the 20th minute of the first half to about the 55th minute before I had to go, I think Wigan were the better side. So I would concur with you on that. It was John Champion and Matt Jackson, which is always a great commentary pairing. I should also mention, Chris, I watched a number of the digested or condensed MLS matches from MLS Live. So Dallas, Seattle, Atlanta, and Vancouver, where there was a controversial red card to Kendall Watson in the first 10 minutes from Vancouver, and a few of the other matches I did watch. So it's not that I didn't watch any MLS this weekend. I just didn't watch it live.
Yeah, and for me, it was the first weekend in the season that I haven't watched any Major League Soccer. There was no game on Sunday that was nationally televised. There was one on Saturday, which is the NYCFC Orlando game, which we'll get into in a little bit. But all right, Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news.
Yeah, so according to the New York Times, FIFA President Gianni Infantino will ask members of the Executive Council to approve plans for a new global women's league this week. The proposed competition would feature 16 of the women's top national teams and begin play as early as November 2019. FIFA also plans to add 4 regional leagues to encourage the development of women's soccer globally and to allow the best performers from these regions to, a chance to win promotions in the top division in a system of promotion and relegation. This is a really exciting potential development. Now, I don't know how NWSL, which is a single entity league, which also has there have been some snickerings, Chris, about player selections for the U.S. women's national team being related to whether a player plays in NWSL or not. And we have some players now that have returned from Europe who are now suddenly getting selected for the national team again. I don't know how this affects that, but the women's game is moving by leaps and bounds. A lot of coverage of women's UEFA Champions League, which is at the quarterfinal stage this week, even during this international break, men's international break. So I guess the U.S. either has to get with the program or get left behind.
Yeah, it's good news. I think hopefully
very
this,
good news.
Yeah, hopefully this happens. And I like the idea of pro rel between the different leagues to kind of add some competitiveness, and let's see how this hopefully it'll be approved, and hopefully it'll work out. We'll have to wait and see how everything unfolds from there. Now, moving on, Fox Sports has decided to put the UEFA Champions League first leg match between Liverpool and Manchester City on FS2. This is going to be in early April, while Sevilla against Bayern Munich that same week will be on Facebook Live. So the matches that are going to be on FS1, I think it's the Juventus against Real Madrid game on the Tuesday, which is FS1. And so then the Sevilla-Bayern is on Facebook that day. And then the day of the Liverpool-Man City game on FS2, it's going to be Barcelona against Roma on FS1. Now, Kartik, I understand what they're doing. I mean, it looks like, I mean, obviously from Fox's point of view, they're probably hoping for a Barcelona-Real Madrid final. I mean, and put that on Big Fox and get big numbers. My concern with this is that you have the Barcelona against Roma game, and no offense to Roma fans, but there's not a lot of Roma fans in the United States. And it's probably going to be a very... Well, actually, Roma's playing well, but it's probably going to be a very one-sided game. Then you have the Liverpool against Manchester City game, which both of those groups have large fan bases, Liverpool more so than Man City, but still a large fan base. And you put that game on FS2. The challenge with FS2, as we know, is that there's a lot of people that don't get FS2. And then the Sevilla against Bayern Munich game, that one I have more of a concern with, because what's happening is rather than put that game on FS2, Fox is now putting that on Facebook Live. The reason that they're putting it on Facebook Live is because Facebook is paying Fox Sports to have the game on Facebook. So from Fox's pockets, they're generating more revenue from this as part of the deal that they have with Facebook. But to me, it hurts the growth of soccer in the United States when you have games put on Facebook and you have all these people at bars, I mean, at different places around the United States who either don't have Facebook or can't stream Facebook in a bar to show a Sevilla Bayern Munich game, which should be a good game at that too. So what do you think, Kartik? What are your thoughts on this?
A lot, actually. So first off, it's kind of complicate things for myself and people at my office who are Liverpool fans. I'm obviously a Manchester City supporter. Maybe I want to miss this game because Manchester City has a horrid record at Anfield, even after the takeover. And I don't expect Manchester City to get through this two legs, but still want to see it, obviously. It's a Champions League quarterfinal, and we don't have FS2 at the office. So that's a complication, I think, not just for us, but for people all over the country. In terms of the Bayern-Sevilla match being bumped to Facebook, that's just a pity. We know why they're doing it. You've outlined it. But I think it going into a World Cup, which Fox is broadcasting, where a number of the players who play for Bayern are going to be prominent figures. And then you've got in Benega with Sevilla, a prominent player, and a couple other guys with Sevilla also, you're actually kind of limiting your ability to advertise your product that's coming up over the summer. So I don't understand that decision. The Roma Barcelona, I guess they want to highlight Barcelona. I get that, but there's a larger fan base. Arguably, okay, so this is where we get into casuals versus hardcores, Chris. There are more hardcore Liverpool supporters in this country than Barcelona supporters. But there are more casual Barcelona fans everywhere, right? People who will just tune in from the random Barcelona game. So Fox, we know, has a strategy based around casuals versus some other networks that broadcast soccer in this country who take a different perspective. So that probably explains that decision. Thankfully, they're showing Real Madrid and Juventus, the best of the ties, of the four ties, in the at least they're showing the first leg on FS1. Let's hope the second leg is not on FS2 of that. I worry about that.
Yeah, I think part of it, though, too, Kartik, is that 9 times out of 10 in the past, I would say that Fox would have put Liverpool Man City on FS1. Historically speaking, they've always put the Premier League Champions League matches involving Premier League teams on FS1. And actually, I've criticized them for that in the past before, too, because there's been other matches that have been on FS2 that was more of an interesting match in a Premier League one with Premier League sides. What I think that they're doing there, Kartik, actually, is they're focusing on the World Cup. They were saying, okay, right, we've got Ronaldo and Messi as two of our main people that we're marketing to promote the World Cup. So let's have Messi in Barcelona on FS1 as well as Ronaldo and Real Madrid on FS1. And that's a perfect segue to talk about the World Cup and how you can watch these stars, I mean, on Fox.
Even though Alexi Lawless has said on numerous occasions he's really excited to watch Mo Salah in the World Cup. Since we're going back to that topic we talked about in the first segment. So obviously maybe they're not listening to their own broadcast talent. I'm sure the broadcast talent, unfortunately, isn't involved in this decision-making process. The decision-making process is made at a higher level. But I just find that ironic because Lawless, and I agree with him, has said on repeated occasions that that might be the player he's most excited to watch this summer is Mo Salah.
And I'm not convinced that the Barcelona against Roma number, the viewing number for that, would be greater than Liverpool Man City. I'd have to go back into the numbers, but the Barcelona number would be big, of course. Roma number would be very, very small. And then the Liverpool Man City numbers, both of those would be strong too. So so I don't think it's a numbers thing. I think it's more about marketing and promoting and them just pushing the World Cup coverage. But anyway, so if you're a listener who is a Liverpool or Man City fan or a fan of soccer and you want to make sure you watch that match, definitely take that into consideration that that's going to be on FS2 and make your plans before the first week of April when that match kicks off. All right, Kartik, let's move on to some other news.
Yeah, Amazon has announced that their Fly on the Wall Manchester City documentary won't be released until later this year and will be entitled All or Nothing Manchester City. Be similar in scope to the Juventus first team documentary, which Netflix did a different thing with. They decided to release half the series at the midway point of the season during the winter break, and then they're going to release the second half of the series after the season.
All right, and moving on. According to a Fox Sports executive VP of marketing, so one of the chief marketing executives, the U.S. failing to qualify for the World Cup did not alter their marketing plans for the event. He's quoted in Multichannel News. He says, the U.S. team would have been a nice additive, a bit of our marketing plan that obviously goes away and was never the lead part of our strategy, he said. The nature of the World Cup is that you have these incredibly global superstars like Ronaldo, Messi, and Neymar, and global brand name teams like Germany, France, England, and Brazil. That's really what has traditionally driven World Cup interest and audiences in the United States, much more so than the U.S. team, which typically has not been a threat to win the World Cup. So, Kartik, I heard you chuckle. I'm chuckling to myself. But when he says that the U.S. has typically not been a threat to win the World Cup, that's true. I mean, the last, 2014 and 2010 World Cups, they reached the round of 16. But for him to position this, to spin it really, as in that that Fox wasn't planning on having the US be the main focus of their marketing plan anyway, and that they're going to focus on, I mean, the Messis, Ronaldos, and Neymars, which is convenient because that's their marketing plan, and also global brand names such as Germany, France, England, and Brazil. To me, this is BS, Kartik. What do you think?
Yeah, first off, I think it's funny he mentions England. We'll get to that in a minute. But first off, the interest in the World Cup, in the latter stages of the World Cup for ESPN in the last three cycles, I would say 6, 10, and 14, have been largely driven by casuals that started watching the U.S. because of the promotion around the U.S., particularly in 2006. Then in 2010, I think ESPN had a multifaceted strategy. One track was to promote Team USA and the U.S., but another track was to promote this as kind of a comparable event to the Olympics, but not build it around individuals. They never did that. Okay, yeah, Messi is everyone knows Messi, everyone knows Ronaldo, but their marketing was very different, about nations, about unity, the world coming together every 4 years. Fox's strategy seems entirely different, and it's disingenuous for Fox to say the U.S. wasn't part of their strategy, because their entire soccer, the entire way they cover this sport is about propagandizing and promoting the American angles to everything, to every single thing they do.
Well, that's the thing that made me chuckle when I read the quotes when I saw it originally, was that I'm thinking, okay, from the U.S. women's side, I mean, that was rah-rah USA all the way through. And the record numbers they got from the U.S. From the Women's World Cup was because of their promotion of the United States. And they were lucky that the U.S. women's team did so well, which was great, and went all the way to win it. And then also, even in the last two World Cups, on the men's side, most of those large numbers were driven by the success and hope of the United States team. So 2010, you look back and go, they were one goal away from reaching the quarterfinals. I mean, when they lost to Ghana in the 2014 World Cup.
They won their group, by the way, in 2010.
Right. And they were, in 2014, they were one goal away from going to penalty kicks. And then with penalty kicks, you mean, it's a Russian roulette. You never know that they could have gone into the quarterfinals on that one. And then ultimately they lost to Belgium in that round of 16 game. But those numbers from ESPN were driven largely by the United States' success. So to have the U.S. not in the tournament is going to have a huge impact on the numbers. And for Fox to spin it that the focus is not really on the U.S. anyway. We were planning on just doing this taking all 32 teams equally and covering them that way, and then talking about brand name teams like Germany, France, England, and Brazil. It's total BS.
Yeah, in 2010, ESPN had England and the U.S., the first match there, the first set of matches, on a Saturday afternoon. It drove the narrative for the entire tournament. The U.S. gets a draw in that match. They end up winning the group. It hooked people. And then those people stayed with the tournament after the U.S. was eliminated by Ghana in the round of 16. In 2014, similarly, the U.S., the first game was on a weekday against Ghana. They won that match, but then had a record number for the Saturday match against Portugal, where they blew a late lead, but it was entertaining, it was exciting, it was Cristiano Ronaldo against the U.S. The U.S. ultimately got a result and got through that group, even though there was heartbreak at the end of that match. That drove a lot of the excitement. And we have to stress again, the U.S. may not have been a threat to win the tournaments, but they made the knockout stages of both of the last two World Cups, which I think really helped sustain some sort of interest in the competition. It's going to be very difficult for them. Secondly, they seem to be wanting to avoid the entire conversation about Russia. I saw Rob Stone's comments to people announcing about highlighting the positives of Russia. England is mentioned in this quote. That is not a story that's going to go away anytime soon. Look, there's a lot of internal debate in England. We can discuss this on another pod, but a lot of angst about the English team going to Russia for a World Cup and the potential propaganda that gives Putin and his regime in Russia, Boris Johnson, the foreign secretary, as well as a number of MPs, have expressed their concerns about the World Cup now becoming an event for propaganda for Putin. So Fox wants to avoid that topic, yet embrace England as one of the leading teams, brand name teams, as they call it, in this competition. They're going to come across as being a little silly, I think.
I mean, that's the thing with ESPN, is that I can picture that if this was ESPN that still had the rights to the World Cup, during the international break, and they're talking about ESPN FC, trying to figure out what topics to talk about. I can see Bob Lee having a special, having a kind of a one-hour special that talks about Russia, all the issues, everything from the nerve gas spy incident that's happening right now in England, and what type of impact that's going to have on the World Cup this summer, whether England should pull out. Having, say, Gab Mokotti, kind of a live video satellite transmission, having Gab Mokotti talk about it, focusing on the topic, not hiding away from it.
They'd have Jeremy Schapp maybe trying to talk to Boris Johnson or talk to someone on the Russian side, Putin, you know, some of the political leaders. I don't know that we're going to get this from Fox. Look, I mean, the news division associated with Fox has its own opinions about Russia, if you ever watch them. So everything's fine there, right? So I think it may even end up trivializing some aspects of very serious news gathering and journalism that would go on around the World Cup. And you just go back to 2016. You don't have to go that far back to Euro 2016. If Fox were covering that event, would they have had the capabilities to cover the hooliganism, which involved Russian fans and English fans, right? And Russian, organized Russian hooligans, and some of the other issues, the Croatian supporters, the match violence, the protests, the strikes, the public sector strikes in France. Would they have had the capability to even do partial justice to those storylines? Maybe we should withhold judgment, but I'm pretty negative. I'm pretty pessimistic about this.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see. So I think the closest that Fox will get to this is Grant Wall. And I can see Grant Wall kind of talking about what's happening in some city in Russia and about how there was some violence that broke out. But it's not going to be your really thought-provoking, very deep analysis, really investigative reporting, finding out exactly what's happening, kind of feet on the street. So it's one to keep an eye out for. But I think as things unfold, it's something that Fox can't hide away from this. And they don't have right now, they don't have the people in place to really cover this in great detail and kind of fairly. And we'll have to wait and see what happens.
Yeah, I'm not optimistic though. I think that there's probably going to be an effort to whitewash this stuff, which you could say, well, it's because they're a FIFA rights holder. Well, no, ESPN didn't whitewash this stuff ever that I can remember. Maybe years ago, but in the most recent tournaments, be it the Euros, which is under a UEFA deal, or the World Cup under a FIFA. Yeah,
I mean, Brazil, they really went in hard in terms of.
Yeah.
I mean, saying, okay, here's what's happening in Brazil. I mean, these stadiums that have been built, and then just down the road, it's like all of this, I mean, poverty, crime, et cetera, they didn't hold back at all.
That's correct. However, there are people who said, oh, it's because they've lost the FIFA contract, they've lost the rights, that they're doing that. But that's correct. They're the UEFA rights holder through, they have 2020 as well, and they were on the ground, very cutting edge reporting, using the resources of ABC News also and their Paris Bureau with the Euro 2016. And again, Fox is just equipped differently, and that's okay. But they're also, from my perspective, shying away. I was put out if your listeners aren't picking up on this, on Rob Stone's comments that, oh, we're going to highlight the positive stories about Russia. There's a lot, you know, we're going to paint that picture. Okay. Well, that's, that comes across as very propaganda-ish. You can't shy away from the political climate we're in currently.
Well, this is the show to talk about stuff like this, Kartik. So, and also even to Fox's, they've put a lot of focus on their National Geographic specials that they're going to be doing. In some interviews I've heard recently that a lot of the National Geographic people have no knowledge or no interest in soccer, which is fine. So they're kind of creating different segments focused on Russian culture, And again, sounds like Wildlife, perhaps, sound like puff pieces, but kind of profile pieces about Russia. I don't know. I'm not interested in that stuff. I mean, I can just turn on National Geographic and watch things like that if I'm interested in that. What I want to find out is kind of more the ESPN side of things, as far as what's really happening in Russia. If they're going to go down that path, what's the reality rather than kind of this fairy tale? One more thing, Kartik, too, is that let's move on to the last news item for the segment.
Yeah, so BN Sports has filed a carriage complaint against Comcast for alleged discrimination. The statement from BN Sports USA reads, quote, due to a discriminatory and patently unfair renewal proposal from Comcast, BN Sports has been forced to take legal action and file a carriage complaint. Comcast has ignored its obligations as a vertically integrated network in favor of their own soccer content and other sports-related programming to the detriment of BN services and audiences and the audiences we serve. Comcast has two wholly owned networks that carry sports programming, NBC Sports and NBC Universo. NBC Sports Network is what they're referring to. We have cited a few clear examples of Comcast's discriminatory behavior in favor of these affiliates, and these examples are most of the programming is not featured in HD, which obviously is a huge disadvantage for our passionate viewers who want the best sports action viewed with the best possible experience. In spite of the popularity of BN Sports, we are not fully distributed, but rather relegated to second tiers. And that point about the HD, I've heard the complaint from many Comcast or Xfinity subscribers in South Florida. So keep that in mind. We aren't authentic. Go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say too. When I had Comcast before I cut the cord, same thing for me too. It was in HD in the beginning, but then it did switch to SD. But I agree with that point.
Yeah, we aren't authenticated since Comcast doesn't have BN Sports Connect. So that is a disadvantage to anyone that is a Comcast subscriber that wants to watch other sporting events via BN. There are roughly 6,000 hours of top quality BN sports programming that is not viewable to Comcast subscribers. And they say this is unacceptable and will not stand. Our priority is and always has been to provide the most compelling program coverage and analysis to our loyal viewers. We hope Comcast will operate with the same spirit of customer-centric fairness and resolve this issue quickly, unquote.
So I agree with this complaint. I'm sure probably a lot of our listeners do too, where if you do have Comcast, it's very you might have BN Sports, but it's probably going to be an SD. Or it's going to be on a kind of a Latin package, so it's not that easy to get in HD, and but also BN Sports Connect too. That's a big one too. They've never been able to when you go to BN Sports Connect and you have to log in with your cable or satellite provider or streaming provider. Comcast isn't one of those, so you're not able to actually access all of that content, which there's a ton of games on there, a ton of programming on there that you're not able to get. My thing with this, Kartik, is that while I agree with BN Sports, and I think they have every right to file this complaint, it sends a worrying signal to me, is that they're in trouble. Because the same complaint that you have here, FS2 could say the same thing too. I mean, a lot of Comcast around the nation don't have access to FS2, or if they do, it's in SD. Yes, they do have authentication to the Fox Sports Go app. But to me, this is kind of BN Sports saying, we're in trouble. We need to get better distribution. Our numbers aren't increasing, and we're in trouble. This is kind of almost like not a Hail Mary, but it's a warning sign that BN Sports is concerned about them not being able to get increase their numbers.
Yeah, there's a lot of speculation on the street, buzz on the street about BN's current predicament in terms of increasing its its viewership, its scope, its ability to get on other cable systems. So, yeah, and your point about FS2 is very well taken, because I think if Comcast does have an agenda, which I'm not saying they do, we had these same allegations about Time Warner when they chose not to carry some Fox channels in the past, and Time Warner, of course, is the owner of CNN. I think we're in a position where we're looking at
Actually, Kartik, though, when you think about it, it's to me, it's it is an issue. I mean, Comcast owns NBC Universal, which owns NBC Sports Network, which owns, you know, all these Universo, which also owns Telemundo. So they're all part of the same family.
Yeah.
And I can see the complaint that these being sports has been around quite a long time. It's been a number of years now. And they still have not been able to get on, to get beIN Sports Connect authenticated, and not been able to get on a lot of these channels nationwide. So I see where they're coming from. It's not a fair system by any means. I just think at the end of the day, it's a warning sign. And that's the thing, too. We've heard about that they've had cutbacks at beIN Sports. Hopefully this gets resolved. I mean, by doing this, beIN Sports puts this out in the open. But I think it's actually going to hurt them more than it's going to help them. But we'll have to wait and see on that one.
Right, yeah, my point just was being that I think Fox has a greater grievance, and potentially a concerted grievance, because I think there is a battle going on between Comcast at the corporate level and Disney and 21st Century Fox at the corporate level. So I'm not sure beIN and Al Jazeera, their parent company, come into this, but certainly Fox does. Maybe that is part of the explanation for FS2 not being on all these systems. So you may have uncovered something there as we were having this conversation.
Okay, let's move on to TV ratings. So this past weekend, there were some interesting ones here, Kartik. The one that had the highest rating was Club Leon, Landon Donovan's team, against Lobos on Univision. That one had 914,000 viewers, which is a huge number for two clubs that are notoriously not the biggest clubs in Mexican soccer. Chivas against Tigres had 866,000. And then you had the Chivas-Seattle CONCACAF Champions League game on Univision Deportes from last week, and that one had 745,000 viewers. So some big numbers there for Liga MX clubs and Liga MX games, except for the CONCACAF Champions League number, which is a great number too. All right, we've got a bunch of other ones too, Kartik. Any of these jump out at you as far as disappointing or exceeding your expectations?
Yeah, it was a disappointing week, but it was a strange week without much Premier League. Look, the time windows didn't fit my viewing schedule, so not much Premier League because of the FA Cup. Bundesliga was relegated to FS2, and the big Bundesliga game, which I wanted to watch, I should have mentioned this in the first segment, was relegated to Fox Soccer Plus, that beIN Leipzig and Bayern. So,
That one, interestingly, so Univision had it, Univision Deportes had it. So that one had 158,000 viewers on Univision Deportes,
wow,
which is a great number. But just imagine if that game had been on FS1. It would have been, who knows? But it would have been a good number for that, too.
It might have approached 300,000, which is a lot for a Bundesliga game.
Oh, that's huge. Yeah, for them, that's huge. But that's the thing, too, from this past weekend, the way that it's structured with the FA Cup games, kind of scattered through the weekend, and then you had the Premier League games, but only a few of those, it definitely hurt the kind of the flow. So if you started watching your soccer, if you're used to watching it on NBCSN, you switch it on Saturday morning and there's nothing on. And then you have to switch to the Spurs-Swansea game, which was kind of very one-sided. So that lack of flow definitely hurt the numbers. So, for example, we had the Swansea-Spurs game had 166,000 viewers on FS1, pretty poor there. And then the Liverpool-Watford game, actually, no, the Huddersfield Palace game, I have to piece this whole thing together, it was at 256,000 viewers. The Liverpool-Watford game had 294,000 viewers. So all of these numbers are way below what they would normally be. And then you had some other numbers too. But the Man United-Brighton match didn't even register a large number, so we don't even know what that number was. And that was the FA Cup game, which was a late game. It was like a 3:45 game. To put all this into context, though, Kartik, NBC has been very quietly acquiring a lot of rugby rights. And I think they're looking at rugby as in kind of the next Premier League soccer opportunity, or at least to try to acquire that demographic profile of people that watch soccer, Premier League soccer, probably are very likely to also might be interested in rugby, or a different crowd that's not into soccer but would be a similar profile that would be interested in rugby. But the Ireland against England Six Nations game, and this was on tape delay, it wasn't even live, on NBC on Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. Eastern, had 674,000 viewers. And I would say that number, if NBC still had Major League Soccer, that number for the rugby was much higher than what they would have gotten for an MLS game, unless it's like LAFC against Atlanta United or something like that. But so to put that into context, rugby had much greater viewing figures than all of the English soccer games from this past weekend.
Wow. That's pretty remarkable. And again, it shows the power of NBC when they promote something. They've been doing a lot of promotion of rugby recently.
Exactly. All right, so let's move on to listener mailbag. The first one is from NGS in Alamo City, and he sent us this tweet. He says, Kartik was talking about West Ham on the latest World Soccer Talk podcast and about a club identity and community involvement and support at times being more important than profit. It was a great little segment. And I agree, Kartik. I think that was just right in terms of, Columbus Crew is a perfect example of this too, where you're looking at a club that has a strong community base, a strong identity nationwide. A lot of soccer fans in the U.S. kind of have an affinity to Columbus and the stadium because of the U.S. men's national team, as well as being one of the first team in the United States to have a soccer-specific stadium. Really kind of a trendsetter for Major League Soccer. And everything that's happening with them, you could also look at West Ham too. It's different, but there are some similarities there. And I agree that both Major League Soccer and West Ham United putting profits first and then the community second, and it's coming back to haunt both of those.
Yeah, I agree. And thanks for the shout out, NGS in Alamo City.
So TC from Colorado emailed us this request. He says, I always enjoy the podcast, guys, and I appreciate the information. Just try to make it shorter, maybe less review of games, as there are lots of other podcasts that do that. And TC, we hear you. We always try to kind of shorten it up as much as possible. Some weeks, last week's probably a good example, there's just so much soccer on, whether it's CONCACAF Champions League, regular UEFA Champions League, you mean, and then all the international leagues from around the world, as well as Major League Soccer. There's a lot to go through, but we'll try to kind of shorten those up as much as possible so we can get to kind of the meat on the bone, which is a lot of these topics, and also, of course, everyone's feedback. And then next up is ZZ Average Geek ZZ, or if he's from England, it probably would be ZZ Average Geek ZZ. And he sent us this tweet. He says, thanks for the read on the pod, which is going back a week or two ago. This is when he was talking about artificial turfs and then not being all the same. And he sent us a great link to an article that was on 442 about the turf that he referenced. And we'll include that in the show notes. But it is interesting. It's an interesting story because not all artificial turfs are the same. So I learned a lot from this too in terms of the different types as well as the maintenance of these turfs. So when we do see a turf, an artificial turf, I think I always kind of jump to like, I hate this thing. But there's different levels. Some are better than others. And just as one example, Kartik, we've talked about this on the pod probably a couple of years ago. It's been a while, but Swansea Stadium, their turf that they use does include artificial fibers in the turf. And the reason that they do that is that, of course, Swansea City plays every week or two, but also they have a rugby team that plays on that same pitch too. So to kind of keep the pitch together as best as possible, especially with all the rain that they have in Wales, they use artificial fibers that are threaded into the grass to kind of hold it together and keep it lasting as long as possible. So if you, the listener, have any questions, feedback, or comments, we'd love to read them out on air. Our email address is web@worldsoccertalk.com. You can tweet us at World Soccer Talk or hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. Now, Kartik, I think this episode is a little bit shorter than usual, so TC and other listeners will be happy. Kartik, where can listeners find you on Twitter if they want to read up on your latest rants, raves, or articles or interviews?
Yeah, it's KKFLA737. My DMs are open, so you can DM me there. I haven't been tweeting much lately, trying to keep it at a minimum, especially when it seems like you could react to every little thing. So picking my spots to tweet more than I previously have.
Yeah, and you can find me on Twitter at World Soccer Talk. So thanks for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review. And Kartik, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.